This is Ahval Online, meeting point of accurate news and free comment on the current affairs of Turkey. Welcome to our podcast series.
Hello, my name is Nicholas Morgan. I'm an editor at Ahval News, and this is Turkey Abroad. Joining me this morning is Dr. Asli Telli from Berlin. Asli, how are you?
Fine, thank you. And you, Nicholas, hope you're fine too.
I'm doing great this morning, and I'm really happy that you could take the time to join us today.
Thank you. Thank you too.
So what I want to ask you is about the state of the internet and particularly the new social media law passed last summer in Turkey today. And, you know, there has been a bit of a progressive takeover of different corners of the internet in Turkey since at least the 2016 coup attempt. And that included closing the telecommunications authority, trying to take control of the internet service providers. And then, of course, we have this new law on top of it all. But what I want to ask you is, how did the coup really worsen this crackdown on social media in Turkey?
Right. We've been having a lot of problems with the crackdown on the internet, actually. So this dates back very long. But like you said, the 2016 coup attempt was actually a peak point for that. Since after the coup attempt, there was a rigorous witch hunt, basically. Say the draconian measures started by AKP. This was the time I call the dragon biting its own tail to release the poison, since the party itself and the government bodies were actively involved in the coup attempt itself. Thus, the impact of this on digital rights and freedoms was very costly and devastating for the whole society, especially the civil society and, of course, digital rights defenders. The policy developments and online restrictions in the aftermath of the coup attempt included basically, like you said, the closure of the Turkey's telecommunications authority, the direct government control of internet service providers, and interception of digital communications by way of decree laws, actually, because after the coup attempt, one needs to also focus on the state of emergency measures, which were called also the draconian measures in many literature. So the state of emergency allowed the government to just process decree laws whenever they found it necessary or whenever they found their control or authority in peril. So it also meant the facilitation of social media censorship by means of Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube content removals, and also coordinated online harassment campaigns by pro-government users against alleged coup planners, Kurdish activists, and government critics in general. So in the period after the coup attempt up until now, and it still goes on, we have seen new tactics used by the government, such as throttling, the slowing down of social media platforms and open channels of communications, extensive censorship and content removals, harassment and hate crimes by trained troll teams. So the picture is really awful.
Yeah, and you know, this new law, internet law number 5651, that's meant to aim directly at these social media companies and really regulate and give the power to block a lot of the content that they're posting on their platforms, or at least, and then forcing the representatives of these countries, companies rather, whether it's Facebook, TikTok, et cetera, to take down the content on demand from Turkey. And how significant do you think that this law really is in terms of the degradation of freedom of expression, freedom of speech inside Turkey now?
It is actually very significant. It has become a buzzword for us, for the digital rights activists and the civil society that are fighting for internet freedoms in general. The law 5651 is basically a buzzword because it emerged back in 2007. And since 2007, we have seen, say, new ages or new let's say, moments of the new tactics or new formulations that are re-injected into that law through what we call the package, law packages or legislation packages. So you see a pack of laws and you can't really sort of just make sense of what they really refer to, because each, say, item is somehow intricately related to each other. And because it's all in one package, you try to do advocacy for a few of the items, whereas, you know, a few other items are somehow isolated. And so you can't really manage to sort of just frame your advocacy. It's, like I said, it's not a new law. It has a history and dates back to 2007. It was the actual law that banned YouTube back in 2009 due to the alleged content on Turkish Republic history, inciting terror and a peril to the sovereignty of the nation state. It is also the law that banned Wikipedia in Turkey. The background of the draconian measures were prepared in 2007 and 2016 period, actually. This law also includes items such as child pornography or illegal content and discourse on alternative news portals, blogs, or social media accounts of independent journalists. Thus, the blockages, filters, and content removals were already on the agenda back then. The Gezi movement back in 2013 aggravated these measures and also increased the assault of the government on digital freedoms. Back when we see after the coup attempt post 2016 period, like I said, the reformulation of that buzzword, of that legislation called the law number 56551, is actually really noteworthy in the fact that it also includes measures to aggravate control under a unique authority, basically. And we can also see that the new formulations of certain fines pressed against, social media companies or the platform giants, unless they assign a representative, for instance, a domestic representative. This has already been put forth. So it was back in place back in October 2020, and we're seeing fines arising, and we're also seeing certain reactions from the social media companies as well. The picture is really very new and keeps changing with the new strategies, basically.
Speaking of the more immediate effects of this law, at least recently, I think it was this week where Facebook announced that they were going to be appointing a representative to go to Turkey and respond to this law. But also Facebook was extremely careful to make a statement saying that they'll leave the country if they feel like freedom of expression is being challenged or if it violates the company's values and so on. But that's still a pretty significant move that they were able to push a company like Facebook to respond to it. So it does strike me as the law being pretty effective, so, or at least to some degree, in getting even the largest companies to comply with it.
It seems like it, and it is communicated as such. But when we check the very representatives, so we can actually just also see the names flowing of those representatives by Facebook and also Twitter, we can also see that these names have worked in certain workaround strategies in the past. So other countries, more polarizing countries, countries with polarizing politics, have also tried to push measures against these social media giants, and they have somehow found workarounds because the public, the community, the society in those countries are basically almost dependent on those social media platforms for receiving information, even though most of that information is really polluted, and some of it can even be called fake news, because the whole media landscape, let alone the digital media sphere or the internet sphere, the whole media landscape is basically under assault by political polarization, or under, say, control of one party in those countries, also namely Turkey. And so it's not really easy to sort of just prepare those let's say, countermeasures and expect that what is in the picture is going to be portrayed as it is designed by this one unique authority. Of course, there is going to be dissent by not only the public, but the private sector giants themselves as well.
It does, when you mention it polluting the information, I think that's a really interesting point also, because you already brought up already the organized troll campaigns or the bots that work online on behalf of the government. But then there was another study I saw some time ago that suggested that Turkey is particularly prone to suffer from, you know, more conspiratorial and susceptibility to fake news, quote unquote, inside the country. But how do you think that this law really contributes? How do you think the media literacy really ties into this whole situation right now with social media?
I think this media literacy needs also to be a buzzword, but we, the digital rights advocates or digital rights defenders, have not been so far very successful in advocating this campaign rigorously, so as to, you know, do, let's say, the truth finding and the different tactics of how to sort of just depollute the digital sphere. There are actually many nice projects and initiatives, and also successful initiatives, at least observatories or, say, watch initiatives like Turkey Blocks, for instance, that actually just function as an observatory for these content removals, bans and blockages, illegal bans and blockages by the government or by just any sort of trolls, the troll teams or bots you've mentioned in your question. But it's never enough. So I think the digital media literacy needs to somehow be really funded well enough and needs to rise on the agenda, because the advocacy rises and the more these initiatives get empowered, basically, there are new strategies and tactics used by, let's say, the authoritarian governments to create workarounds and to pollute the environment and to increase the political polarization, because that's the only way they can remain in control and keep up their authoritarian measures. Mm-hmm. They have no other way out. And so maybe we just need to recognize that well and try to build the advocacy for digital media literacy despite that. So maybe ignoring what they're doing and, you know, looking at a more, let's say, open and distributed network of possibilities would be a good solution.
Mm-hmm. You know, with these trolls, bots, and all these other kind of measures being put online to alter, curb, shape speech in Turkey, and then, you know, you also have some of these other. I've seen reports about how the authorities even invented an app where citizens can report what they think is terrorist propaganda online, which, of course, you know, it's notorious for being very liquid and fluid, And what that actually means sometimes, whether it's, you know, PKK propaganda or Gulenist propaganda by the according to the authorities. And it does almost give this impression that they're creating something of a almost like a Stasi-like state online in Turkey. But do you think that this belief is just do you believe that this is all just aimed at suppressing the dissidents online, or just a continuation of this reshaping project that the AKP has kind of undergone in Turkey over the years to reforge a new identity for the country?
I'm sorry to say that it is both, actually. Because I think this is a really strategic move, in that AKP, or the dictator on the lead right now, is onto pulling any dirty trick possible. It is also an epidemic of right populist governments to increase the polarization in political discourse. We're watching closely the governments in India, Brazil, Hungary, and Poland, not only Turkey alone. The digital sphere and trolls and bots on social media are a strong part of that strategy. We have also seen trollmongers being paid by governments for election campaigns. It is really concerning to see the adversarial rise ignited by countries like Russia, Poland, and China, for instance. And it is even more concerning to see that actual humans are involved in this. As you mentioned very well in your question, the online reporting apps, for instance, I mean, this is just causing adversary in even, you know, neighbors, and even people knowing each other well, or people facing each other daily. So in Turkey, all I can say is that the legal structure is completely debunked now. And it seems like there is a strong structure and mechanisms that are built in it. It seems like the legal structure still exists, but in practice, it is a complete failure. So the suppression of dissidents also relate to extensive censorship and auto-censorship. Mm-hmm. I could call that fear-mongering. So a certain fear culture is created among the dissidents, or even people who believe in democratic ruling. And this is followed indefinitely by auto-censorship and by online reporting, even by the people that you wouldn't expect, even by sort of the so-called good-natured people that you see in your everyday life. So going back to your question, yes, it is definitely aimed at polarizing Turkish politics, but it is also very gravely ingrained with or related to suppression of dissidents, and also causing adversarial measures.
One last thing I'd like to ask you, because I think that it's probably a question on a lot of people's minds when it comes to this or digital suppression in general. In a couple of years, we're going to see another presidential election, and then possibly even sooner than that, a parliamentary election. And of course, the coronavirus has given Turkey plenty of economic problems to worry about. The social problems and political problems existed before the pandemic, but they've been amplified by it. And given all of these challenges that Turkey's facing right now, do you think these new restrictions on social media really factored into the electoral considerations of Erdogan and President Erdogan and his coalition?
Definitely so. And especially the collecting the control under a single authority points exactly at that. So the more the polls show that the electoral support for AKP is on the fall, the more the dictatorship is on the rise, basically. A possible coalition government with the ultra-nationalist MHP also seems unlikely at the moment, and in 1 or 2 years in time. So the attacks on HDP and also recently on CHP, on basically its leader, the leader of the party, as well as other sort of senior leaders, not only one unique person, These attacks for obscure issues, they just need no further explanation. They're just not acceptable, and it seems like there is these remaining few breathing channels of the AKP government in which they want to use the same old tactics and strategies to throttle back the digital spaces, because that seems to be sort of the only breathing space of the citizens. So they just want to use that very open space for their own purpose and keep polluting it.
Dr. Asiteli, I really do appreciate your time talking about this topic this morning, and I'll probably be in touch again sometime soon about it again, but thank you for your time.
Thank you too. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
My name is Nicholas Morgan, and this is Turkey Abroad.
You can follow Ahval News Online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here, for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.